Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've got a huge Gegenpod to follow a massive weekend of Premier League. One that many will never forget, with Cristiano Ronaldo's second homecoming at Manchester United. Michael Bridges, Mark Schwartz, and Thomas Sorensen are all on deck for this one. So much to talk about. Let's get started. Yeah, what a weekend it was. We often say, what a weekend in the Premier League, but that is absolutely the case for the weekend that was, with Cristiano Ronaldo's return to Old Trafford and goals going in everywhere, big results, and a top four that so many people think will break away, starting to form and looking very, very hard to split right now. Dave Winter with you for another episode of the Gegenpod to run through all of that, and with our all-star cast once again, Thomas Sorensen, Michael Bridges, Mark Schwartz. Great to see you all. Quick word on the weekend that was, because boy, it was fantastic. Are you still buzzing? Thomas, how are you? It was a moment, the weekend, that I think will go down, that we'll remember for a long time.
Oh, it was special. Just sitting there, you know, watching it, you could, you know, through the screen, you could get the tension, the excitement. You can hear the bounce of the whole of Manchester with Ronaldo stepping on the pitch, and also great to see afterwards his emotions and actually being up front with how nervous he was, how special it was for him, and to get the two goals just sealed it all off. It was worth every cent for every person involved, I'm sure.
Yeah, every cent. And also, it was great to see something that we were all guilty of, but so many people were guilty of building up. It lived up to the hype, Bridgie. It was box office deluxe.
Yeah, it certainly did. And, you know, like Tommy was saying there, Ronaldo, absolutely magnificent return to Old Trafford. The Theatre of Dreams got their star on stage, and I just thought he was absolutely brilliant. He delivered. That was the high of the weekend. I think the low of the weekend has got to be the injury to Elliot against Leeds, the young man. And that brought back so many horrendous memories from my injury time at Leeds United when I saw that happen to him. And that was the low for me. Like you say, a weekend that I won't be forgotten. For the right reasons and the wrong reasons, unfortunately.
Schwartzy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ronaldo, do we ever doubt it? Seriously? Mm. Like, it's Ronaldo, homecoming, going to Manchester United. It's like a relationship that's made up in heaven. It was always going to happen. You would kind of think it was certainly naturally the coming together at the end, at some stage of Ronaldo's career, rejoining Manchester United. The thing that sticks out in my mind is when Brian Robson's comments post-match, talking about the atmosphere and the feeling within the stadium, reminded him of the time when Eric Cantona arrived at Manchester United. That was the feeling he had on the weekend watching Cristiano Ronaldo's second debut for Manchester United. I mean, that says it all, I think, for me. That sounds incredible. Remember playing at Old Trafford, you guys will know it as well, what the atmosphere used to be like, the environment, the hostile environment. I think Newcastle were beaten almost before the game began. The atmosphere itself can be intimidating, and it can certainly give the home side, Manchester United, an upper hand, and it did many times before.
It just felt like an occasion as well, Schwartzy, where coming through at midnight here in Australia, it felt palpable. I could actually sense the occasion. Maybe it was the huge number of people there, given where we're sitting at the moment. It just looked even more dramatic and more exciting. But I felt like it translated through to the screens. You could get that sense. And it was a football match, but it felt like it was an occasion all about an event. And that was Ronaldo. Now, we're recording on Tuesday morning. We will touch on Everton against Burnley. Everton winning 3-1. That's just concluded as we record the podcast. Goals to Michael Keane, but impressively, Andros Townsend and Damari Gray as Everton came back from 1-0 down to beat Burnley 3-1. But we will touch on that in a moment, because once we've started on Ronaldo, it's very hard to jump out of that and go into Burnley Everton. We're going to continue on this theme. And Thomas, that theme of the grand sense of occasion. I'd love to get your guys' views or recollections of playing at that on that hallowed turf, and then in light of that, just how big, how momentous the day was with Ronaldo delivering on that theatre.
No, but I think Swartzy said, you know, there's certain grounds where, you know, you sense the history, obviously the quality of the players, and yes, I've played at Old Trafford a lot of times and been the victim of those, you know, Fergie minutes at the end of the game. You know, there was always something special, you know, about the United teams of the past. And you know, me and Swartzy and Bridgie as well, you know, we played through, you know, the Scholes, the Beckhams, the Ferdinands, you know, even back to Steve Bruce and Palliston. And, you know, those eras where United, you know, if you got away with a point there, that was like winning the championship. And you could sense that was back at the weekend for the first time in a long time. You know, whenever the camera was panning, you know, across, you know, the rafters, you could see it in the eyes of the fans, you know, that belief that, you know, the history, you know, the glory days of the past, was it to some extent restored on that day? Can it continue? We'll have to wait and see, because, you know, this is a honeymoon period, obviously, with Ronaldo, but, you know, I think we still saw in the game, when we probably dive into it a little bit more, that tactically they've still got some issues in transition and, you know, and where to fit all the stars in. But yeah, the day and Old Trafford is back. Let's say it that way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is to do with, I mean, obviously the fact that Ronaldo's come back, of course, is more attention, more hype. But if you think about Ronaldo as the personality, as the individual, the demand he puts on his teammates, and I think that's something that Manchester United have lacked over the last number of years. They've lacked an individual. They've had superstars. They've had big name players. They've had world champions, but who have lacked the ability to grab the team, the game by the scruff of the neck and dictate it and almost lift the team in before they walk out on that pitch. And Ronaldo gives you that sense that the demand he puts on them from the minute he walks through that door is enormous. I got that feeling when I first arrived at Chelsea. The pressure from the minute you walk in through that door, firstly from the manager, Jose Mourinho, but secondly from the players that you had around you, the John Terrys, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba, Samuel Eto'o was there. Every single one of those players were used to winning. Ronaldo is used to winning, whether it's his own accolades, whether it's winning domestically trophies, whether it's winning Champions League. He knows what it's like to win and he demands it. And that's what makes him also so special and why he is a superstar. And I think that's what United have certainly lacked. The question is whether or not he can continue that, whether he can that power that he has, that possession, the ability that he has in his possession, whether he's able to continue that throughout the course of the season. I think he will be able to. I think he's so strong, so powerful, so influential that his teammates will be lifted and will go along with that wave.
Bridget, did you want to add anything?
I just thought it was funny, you know, I love me food and drink, and I thought it was funny to see a comment from some of the players at Manchester United the night before on the Friday night, staying at the Lowry Hotel, as they normally do, get themselves match prepared. And with the dinner, one of them said, after we saw Ronaldo look at the desserts tray with a look of disgust, nobody touched them on the Friday night for the first time ever. So I think Swartz has just said that. What he does, you know, has a massive influence on the rest of the group as well. I just thought it was very, very interesting that the players start to follow suit, because they know how professional that man is. And if it's good enough for Ronaldo, then it'll good enough for anybody, mate.
Yeah, there was Lee Grant who said that. He actually came out and said that we normally, maybe some people get a sneaky taste of something from the buffet, but everyone was looking around and no one actually went up after the main course on Friday night.
The rice pudding on a Friday night, it used to be the best. I could never play Ronaldo, I think.
Same as me, Tommy.
That was the best ever. You know, so the, nah, yeah, maybe it was good we played it at a different
different time.
it's an interesting point, though. He will raise the standards. And you even saw in the first probably half an hour, 40 minutes, it did almost feel like there was a heightened excitement of players wanting to get the ball forward to him. Bruno Fernandes was looking, dinking balls and chipping every time he could possibly, you know, look up and find him. But you can almost see, Thomas, that that even just in the sense of wanting to live to the occasion in this first game, that he will raise not only the standards off the park, but in that game, you know, 1-1 against Newcastle, maybe in the past, or 0-0 when they were struggling to break them down, maybe last year there would have been the same old from Manchester United. But just having that little extra dimension, that world-class winning mentality, he can raise those around him. Do you think that's I mean, it sounds cliche for me sitting here, but it is something tangible, isn't it?
It certainly is. I think, you know, Swarty said it as well. I think when you've got players, and we've all played in teams, when you have extraordinary players with that attitude, you know, everyone else follows because nobody dares not do it. You know, you look at the team, you've got obviously Bruno Fernandes, Pogba, who's probably the second ones in line, but yeah. I still doubt that they have that personality that Ronaldo has. And you could see it in the game, you know, his drive, you know, even though he had a bit of a scoff where he sort of from an angle tried, and he, you know, other players, you know, would have been a bit embarrassed, but Ronaldo just brushed it off and he was, you know, he was straight onto it again. And yeah, he got a bit of luck. I think Woodman will be pretty disappointed with the two goals. I think he's even come out and said afterwards that you know, he probably gifted him. But again, that's what Ronaldo does. You know, he takes whatever's given to him. You know, he's just the first goal, like how he sort of spins off the defenders, how he's recognizing the opportunity before everyone else. I think that sums him up. Yes, it's a tap in, but everything that goes on before that is top class.
Yeah.
You know, his movement, his recognition of space and where the opportunity could come, I think it's what you know, everyone else will follow on.
They were the two big moments that stood out for me. It was his anticipation for the goal, Tommy, like you said, the first one to react. He reads the situation. And then the second goal, the way he opens up to make his run, Sanchez has gone high and wide. He's gone high and wide and taken the wing back with him. That opened up the gap a bit bigger for that space for Ronaldo to exploit. But the way he opened up his run so he knew he could get the pass, it was giving the player the idea of, I'm in here, I've opened the gap up for you, play the ball. And then when he takes his touch in the finish, it's just absolutely sublime because he's going at full pelt. And the pace that he was going at is just phenomenal at his age. And yeah, he just delivered on the day. And it was interesting. My daughter had said to me, do you think Ronaldo will be nervous? Here's one for you. And I said, Ronaldo will be nervous, Sadie, on his return to Manchester. He's played in the biggest games in the world. This will not affect him one bit. And my daughter's obviously 14. And after he got on, he scored the two goals. I remember I just said to him, I said, see? But then we saw his interview. And afterwards, Ronaldo actually said he was nervous, which I could not believe. I thought it just made him human. And it was just a great moment. So my daughter's got one up on me there for the expert punditry, as we call it.
The question is, though, Bridgie, is Ronaldo able to do it at one of your favourite places at Burnley on a midweek game? Can he do it at Burnley?
Well, yeah, great question. Does he really want to be there and turn up? I'm going to say yes, because I think mentally he can get through it. Will some of the others? No, some of the others won't, mate. You're right. That's the big question. I think he can. That was the big moment for him, that opening up. I'll tell you what, though, I was pretty disappointed, Swartzy, and I have been since he's, every time I've seen him, the man that was doing so well in the Bundesliga, Sancho. I didn't think he didn't look like he had the confidence to take players on, or he didn't. It wasn't a great performance for me. I know he was outshone by Ronaldo, but I was very disappointed in Sancho.
Yeah, he's struggled at the moment to find his groove, to find his rhythm, and I don't know whether when he went, you know, when he went to Dortmund, obviously he was an unknown quantity. I think little expectation. And then he found his rhythm. I think he was very much at ease and happy with the group of players, and it slotted in very, very well. He had a bit of a down period last season, but part of that was to do with injuries as well. I think the natural thing of the second season syndrome, trying to pick himself up, living up with expectation. And then he delivered again towards the back end of the season. Now United, you know, they've paid a huge amount of money for him. There's a huge amount of pressure on his shoulders. And that this is a make or break period for him. It's going to take him a bit of time. You know, listen, he's a top quality player. But just because he's a top quality player doesn't mean he's going to be a huge success at Old Trafford. We've seen many, many players in the past who have had amazing ability, have gone to big clubs and struggled. I mean, one, Sebastian Veron is a great example for me that always, the first player that I kind of think about, it goes to Manchester United, being an unbelievable world-class player in Italy and coming to England and really, really struggling. And I don't know whether Jadon Sancho will fall in that category. Only time will tell, but he's certainly a top quality player, but he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think the Ronaldo signing will help him because I think it'll just take a little bit of the pressure off him. You know, a little bit. I think we're seeing a little bit similar to what we saw with Havertz last year at Chelsea. You know, you're just that young player, big money, a lot of expectation, and he's got to be given time to settle in. You know, he wasn't a big factor at the Euros. You know, only played marginally. I think he needs to get used to just being, you know, on the pitch regularly with the pressure, and he needs to get a couple of goals. I'm sure he'll be off to the races.
You know what I think is also, it has to do with whether or not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wanted him or not. Because you see with Van der Beek, it's clear that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't want him. Because if he had wanted him, he would have played him more often. And he gives him so little game time. So we've seen it in the past, I think, anyway, that he's not necessarily in total control with the players that come and go at the club. So is Jadon Sancho a player that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer desperately wanted or not? And that will depend on whether how much time he really gets, whether or not Solskjaer is more patient with him, gives him more time to adapt, to slot into that position. I mean, I think it'd be mad not to, but stranger things have happened.
Well, it was the only time I've seen Woodward in the stand with a smile on his face in the last God knows how many years going, yeah, we got our man, we've delivered. And it was the first time the Glazers were actually there taking part in the party. So you knew something special was going on at Old Trafford this weekend when you see the Glazers there.
So on Sancho then, because that's part of, you know, Ronaldo's going to deliver. Even at Juventus, when, you know, Allegri arrived and says you're surplus to requirements, he actually still delivered. It's almost about the moving parts around it. And we have spoken about it at length in the last two episodes, so we won't go into it again and again and again in detail. But the Sancho part is interesting, isn't it? Because Solskjaer has to get it right, whether it's because it wasn't his signing, or how he wants to fit him in, or what way he wants to play. But the moving parts around him, Schwartzy, is what Solskjaer has to get right. From the first impressions of what you saw, is that the template going forward? You know, Newcastle did have some running in behind Pogba and Matic at times as well. How does Solskjaer tackle the other aspects? Because that's arguably going to decide if this works or not.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's like anything. It's finding balance, finding the right combination of players. And Jadon Sancho has shown when he's at Dortmund that he's prepared to do the work going back as well, because that was demanded from him. So it all comes from the manager, what he demands from his players. Ronaldo, you know, you can't expect Ronaldo to do a lot of work going back because you need him to conserve energy. You need him to be that number nine. He needs to be that out-and-out player. He will do some, but he won't do as much as, say, even a Cavani. Because Cavani, that's his player. That's the way he works. His work rate is absolutely exceptional. Jadon Sancho, I think Manchester United, they're going to have to work backwards, you know, in defence. The thing is, whenever you are in a lot of possession, when you are more attacking-minded, you're going to expose yourself. Liverpool did it against Leeds on the weekend. They're going to leave opportunities for the opposition. The question is whether or not they're good enough, whether or not they have the ability, the calmness to then, when they do actually have possession of the ball, to do the right thing with it, to be calm enough to play the right balls, and then once they're in front of goal, to execute their opportunities. I mean, we saw it with Leeds on the weekend, that an unbelievable chance at 0-0. Rodri should have scored. Didn't score, and then that's game over effectively for Leeds United. Had they scored, the game changes. It's the same thing when they're playing against Manchester United. We were talking about briefly about what it's like playing at Old Trafford against Manchester United in the past, how difficult it is. You've got to take your chances, absolutely. You've got to take your chances, especially as a lower team. You've got to take those opportunities because you know that they're going to have abundance of opportunities.
I've got to say, Dave, I'm going to give the Newcastle supporters a little bit of hope because I thought Almiron and Maxim were absolutely magnificent on the counter-attack. And I think if they get Callum Wilson back in this play with that kind of endeavour, they will pick up some results. And the disappointing side for them was seeing Joe Linton, the 40 million man, going up against Cristiano Ronaldo, who they got for 25 million. Joe Linton, yet again, ceases to amaze me how he's actually playing being given a chance there, because he was the only one in that front three that I felt had let Newcastle United down. But going forward, I think that the transition moments were brilliant for Newcastle when you're doing that against Man United. And if they've got Wilson in there, I think they'll take the chances. So a big game next weekend against Leeds United, which is at the minute at the bottom of the table. A massive six-pointer.
So you're not as downcast, Bridgie, on Newcastle? Because the tone, again, it always happens. It flicks about this time of the season. It becomes a bit more grim again, and the circle of doom and gloom arrives over that. And Steve Bruce has to fend off questions from the media, asking him why he went on a quick vacation and all the stuff going off the field at the club. You're not subscribing to that yet? You sort of think that, right, you know,
no.
that United game, there's still some hope for Newcastle this year?
Yeah, there is some hope. Like, they've got to take your chances, and they create a lot of chances. If there's anything to go by, you'll have Almiron with his pace on the left-hand side, Maxim on the right-hand side, or vice versa, and Callum Wilson up top, and it's the supply line going to them. Defensively, when you get that many numbers back behind the ball, there is the odd mistake that's happened. I think, obviously, Tommy mentioned the goalkeeper coming out and saying, you know, he felt that he was at fault, but, you know, they've gone through a few goalkeepers at this moment in time with injuries and suspensions in the COVID cases, with trying to get back as well to full fitness. So there was really, really good signs from Newcastle United, and Steve Bruce has got to deal not only with the media from the playing group and the playing style. He's got to deal with all the stuff going on where the fans are still against Mike Ashley and what's going on up there. But if there's anything, that game, I thought there was a lot of positives for Newcastle United. So the big one will be next weekend. That is a crunch match against Leeds United.
Problem with Newcastle United is midfield. Jonjo Shelvey, as much as there are moments of brilliance, and you can see why he was at Liverpool, you can see why people kind of had an eye on him, there are so many other elements where you think, okay, you know why he's no longer there, and he only was a bit part player at Liverpool. Their biggest problem is in midfield for me, Newcastle. But I agree with Bridgie. I think they'll be fine. I think Steve Bruce's experience, listen, I think he cops untold amounts of abuse, and he should never be getting that sort of abuse.
For no reason as well, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at what he's accomplished at Newcastle over the last couple of seasons. He's accumulated more points, finished higher up the table than Rafa Benitez, but Rafa Benitez is God. Whereas Steve, and let me add as well, Rafa Benitez didn't play exciting football.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, it's not like there were two completely different styles of football between the two, and that Steve Bruce's is boring old sort of school style of football. Absolutely not. I don't think there's much in it. In fact, Steve Bruce has been more successful at Newcastle, and I think that's pretty obvious.
And I thought he would have got a lot less stick because he knows the region. He said, you know, he said he's living his dream being the manager of this football club. I just think because of all the crap offside that the fans have with Mike Ashley and what's been going on there, I feel for Steve Bruce and his staff there. But they're getting through it, and this is a huge, huge season for them. And I think the way he handles himself and conducts himself, he doesn't bite back, he doesn't snap, he never lose it with the media and the fans. You've got to respect that. Like Swartzy says, it's unjustified. So good signs for Newcastle United going forward.
What's good to say?
I agree as well. I think, you know, also, I think it showed at the weekend, you know, with Longstaff and Willock in there. I think, you know, the pace and the energy that you get, you know, I think is a way forward. And with Wilson back, I think you then, you know, St. Maximin can then maybe be a little bit deeper. And you know, they will be playing on the counter attack. And, you know, if they can get more consistent at the back, you know, we saw it, you know, the mistakes at the weekend. You know, I think that's been the problem early on. I think they've just conceded too many goals. They need to shore that up. Then I agree with the other guys. I think that they should be okay.
And I was just going to say, it's good to hear actually a different tone, because most of the tide at the moment is trying to get that pile on that, I guess you're referencing, Schwartzy, that immediately after a few bad results, Steve Bruce becomes the whipping boy. And he actually stood up for himself in the press this weekend and actually had a crack at the local media and said that, you know, you guys are creating this negative wave every time results go the wrong way. And, you know, I think you're right with that. Sir Maximum is one of my favourite players in the Premier League. There's enough, I reckon, just to have a little bit of hope right now about Newcastle. But you mentioned, Bridgie, the game against Leeds. That is a big game if we look ahead. And, you know, 3-0 to Liverpool. There are teams that are going to lose 3-0 to Liverpool this year. But is there any concern with Leeds? No wins over the first four games. First time that's happened, I think, since the 50s in a top flight. In that, do you put those games against the big teams aside and go, look, we Leeds always have a crack, and that's what, you know, there's a risk you're going to get exposed? Or are there a few more concerns just starting to creep up a little bit for you?
Well, there's definitely a few more concerns, because you've got to, there's nothing worse than playing catch up in the Premier League. You've got to get the runs on the board early. And last season, Leeds United did. They had some good results in their first five or six matches. This season, however, completely different situation that they find themselves in when you have a look at that league table and the way the results have gone this season. You know, you're sitting down there, Burnley, Newcastle United, Norwich. And the only hope that is Arsenal are down there with them. So Leeds United have got to pick it up. And that's why I think next weekend is a huge, huge opportunity. It's such a massive match against Newcastle United, because that is the two of them sitting down there at the bottom of the table. And I think what's happened this season, everybody got carried away at the end of last season. I kept a low profile. I always talk about Leeds United. I'll always talk them up. I didn't big them up for this season to say that they were going to go and finish top half of the season. I stuck by it and said, this season is all about survival again. Last season was about staying in the Premier League. It's the same scenario this season. A great addition bringing James in. Might take him a few weeks to get himself up to speed and understand what Bielsa wants. But there is definitely a few little hearts fluttering from the fans, and I would think from the players, because defensively, they do not look as structured, but going forward, still as flamboyant as ever under Bielsa. We know how he plays. Is he going to change it? No, he won't. I think Schwartzy had an interview with Harry Kewell, and Harry was saying at some point Bielsa needs to change it up against other teams when he comes up against the big boys. That's not what he's done. That's not what he's ever done. He believes in his methods, his philosophy, his formula. And like I say, I just think defensively look very, very dodgy compared to last season.
I also think they were caught out a little bit on the weekend. So the Leeds United normally on that front fought high energy, pressing, closing teams down, don't give them time on the ball. I think they also got a bit concerned with the pace of Liverpool. So the game was stretched so much that all of a sudden the ground they needed to cover was so much greater. They were pretty much second best for most of the time. I wonder about the Daniel James signing. I mean, Jack Harrison, I think, has done really, really well for Leeds United. So does he lose his place for Daniel James? You know, yeah. Is Daniel James necessarily a better or an improvement on someone like Jack Harrison? I don't see it. I'm certainly a little bit worried. I thought on the weekend they just looked a little bit jaded. They looked a little bit flat. But let's.
Schwartz, it was all down that left-hand side. The boy Firpo that's coming from Barcelona, the left-back, he looked an absolute... he didn't know where he was. He looked shell-shocked. He was almost putting the white flag up to say, get me off.
I know what you're saying, right? I get that, right? But listen, he's playing against Mo Salah, who is in incredible form. That Liverpool's performance on the weekend, let's flip it around. Liverpool's performance on the weekend was one of their best performances probably in the last 12 months. That was the Liverpool of old. That was the Liverpool that won the title a couple of seasons ago. And I thought they were exceptional. I thought any team would have struggled to deal with Liverpool on the weekend. Certainly that front three. I thought they were absolutely exceptional.
Yeah.
Thomas?
The thing that worries me a little bit is you know, I think you touched on it there, Schwartzy, Bielsa demands so much of his players, and I think you can sense that, you know, that's not the same energy that it was last season. You know, again, there's a few new players, I know that, but you know, when you demand so much of your playing style, the high intensity, it doesn't take a big drop off, a little bit of a few cracks appearing, you know, within the playing group for that to sort of, you know, not be what you want it to be, not having the success. And this is what I'm worried about for Leeds, is that it's just not the same as last season. And that makes them, a survivor instead of being someone who we're thinking of pushing for, you know, a European place, which there was talks about last season.
Well, that's what makes the Newcastle game so pivotal as even a yardstick, because Liverpool, as Schwartzy alluded to, were immense. They were another level above, and Leeds trying to play the same game, pound for pound, were wiped off the park. And so the Newcastle game takes on greater significance. Schwartzy, Liverpool were really good. And the front three we know are really good. Trent Alexander-Arnold we know is really good. But in Fabinho back in midfield and Thiago looking like he's starting to hit his stride, suddenly that's why everyone's so excited about this top four, because it's another cog to Liverpool moving on.
Well, the top five at the moment, Dave. Man City dropped out with Everton winning this morning.
Very true.
Yeah, but I don't see Everton being there for much longer. Like, you know, they'll be there for the
like last season.
I don't see them.
It's not like last season.
They won't be there for the entire season. So it is for me a top four.
Don't you know, get the way of a headline, Bridgie. Come on.
Yeah. When you look at Liverpool, and I know everyone talks about, you know, Salah, Mane, Josh, and I mentioned it as well, saying how phenomenal they were, and they were. I think what's crucial, what has been crucial for Liverpool, is obviously Van Dijk coming back, which then has a knock-on effect. So Van Dijk comes back from injury. He looks like he's never been out. Doesn't look like he's had a serious injury. He looks incredible. Mm-hmm. Joel Matip looks like a different player next to him. And I think people have underestimated how good Joel Matip has been this season. Let's hope he stays fit. And then the knock-on effect is Matip playing so well, but Fabinho pushing back in midfield. And I think that is, and that was crucial. Last season, he played, obviously, went Fabinho back as a centre-half. They played RB Leipzig in the Champions League, and Fabinho was back in midfield. And even Jurgen Klopp talked about the fact that Fabinho was back in midfield and how world-class he is. And the next game, he plays back at centre-half again, and Liverpool struggled. So I think that knock-on effect, Thiago looks a different player with Fabinho next to him in midfield. I thought Thiago last season looked out of his depth, almost. Like, looked like a player that was really struggling with the pace of the Premier League. Now, with the likes of Fabinho next to him, Thiago looks a different level. He looks like that player that was at Bayern Munich. And I think that's key. There's a knock-on effect with Liverpool, even though they only signed one major player this season, and he's not even in the starting lineup. Liverpool effectively have had four or five new signings because of all the players coming back from injury.
I did notice at the time, and then I watched the first goal back again when, you know, Leeds, after having a really good start, were broken open. And it is Matip who comes surging down the field. But what I didn't realize at the time watching it back was it was Fabinho who drops in to allow him to go downfield. And you just see all these elements of, like, this team is back in sync. Yeah. And then there's been a lot of the data come out over the last 24 hours about how good Thiago's performance was. And that while the game was at the Leeds, helter-skelter tempo at the start, he was able just to slow the tempo down and get it onto Liverpool's watch for a little bit longer.
It's the same as Chelsea to a large degree. Jorginho looks an average player without Kante next to him. Yeah, because Kante does a lot of the legwork. You know, Fabinho is the same. The reading and legwork that those guys do with the game is phenomenal. Is for a lot of people, unless you really, really watch those guys and see their contribution in the game, you can kind of almost brush over it a little bit because they fly under the radar so often. But they're so integral part of that machine. Harvey Elliott, his ability, I mean, listen, there's no doubting his quality, right? There's absolutely zero doubting it. But the ability for him to slot into that team is made so much easier because of the likes of a Fabinho, because of Van Dijk, then obviously a Thiago next to him, and that front three. The front three are playing so much better this season, and it's no coincidence because of the way that the team is set up again, with Fabinho in midfield and Van Dijk back at centre-half.
So, go, Tom.
No, I think when you're looking at all the big teams, I think you're looking at multipliers. You know, you're looking at, you know, Man City last year, they get Diaz and suddenly it makes them
a whole lot better defensively, you know, in all aspects. And again,
But you look at Fernandinho and Rodri. So like one of those two holding midfielders, Champions League final, exactly. He takes one of them out and they look a shadow of themselves.
Yeah, multipliers. Exactly, yeah. I like that. What is it?
Yeah, no, it's multiple. No, yeah, every, no,
the Sorensen multiplier theory. Go on.
Yeah. No, but
with Tab. It is the,
yeah. Let's sneak that in as well.
Come on, get on board.
Yeah, you know, but it is, it's true. You know, like, you know, Swartzy explained it there with Liverpool. You know, it is a knock-on effect. So it is a multiplying effect that makes the team so much more, you know, so much better than the individual parts. It's very visible with Liverpool, I think.
Look, one of the reasons why I think maybe, I mean, I even overlooked some of those elements yesterday covering the game because of Harvey Elliott-Bridgie. That was the story. Yesterday morning, on Monday morning, and yeah, he has slotted in brilliantly for a teenager. But it was hard not to just think about that all of yesterday morning. It's a horrible blow, and he's got a big challenge ahead of him. But the support around him in the initial language, where Klopp said, "We will wait for him." I mean, that's a huge endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. And we're still waiting to hear out the whole extent of the damage. Hopefully the dislocation hasn't done any ligament damage, because they're the big ones. If there's any snap or ruptured ligaments in there, we'll wait to find out. Fingers crossed that it's not. But when it happened, you could just tell. I knew straight away by the reaction of Mo Salah, and obviously you could tell by the angle of the leg and Elliot's reaction. It was horrific. And, you know, that I really felt for Strike that made the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't a malicious tackle. It was a tackle that he's got to go and put pressure on the ball. Bielsa demands that he's gone and try to get in there. It was just the angle and the way the two of them fell together that actually added to the woes of Elliot's injury. I felt for him. But if he's in good hands, like you say, the club are taught him up. He's shown and proved what he can do in that midfield. And after losing Gini Wijnaldum, you know, that was a big gap to fill. And he's gone in there and done magnificent. So we wish him all the best. And I just thought it was a lovely story to come out of that, how he went to the Leeds hospital, or the hospital that he was at, sorry, and there was a kid in the bed next to him that had damaged his arm or broke his arm in his football match. And the next thing you know, he's got Elliot's shirt on and his football boots. And it just brought back so many horrible memories, but fond memories of when I had my injury as well at Leeds. And they actually took me to the wrong hospital at first, the paramedics. And when I got to the main hospital to get the operation done, I didn't have any football boots left. And the two paramedics had actually stolen the football boots off me and kept them off my feet. And it wasn't until 20 years later via Twitter that somebody had sent me a picture of this football boot on their fireplace, above the fireplace, in an enclosed case, saying, "Michael Bridges, my daddy was the paramedic that you give these football boots to." And I was thinking, I didn't give the football boots to him. He bloody stole them off us.
You might have been off chops. You might not have remembered giving it to them.
No, I definitely wasn't, because my wife was in the back of the ambulance, and she remembers them cutting the bloody get the Achilles tendon. They cut the shoe off, the football boots off. It was never seen again until 20 years later. So there you go. I just thought that, you know, it was a nice story for Harvey Elliott, and it brought back a memory that I could look back on and laugh at a time of, you know, when it was probably one of the worst times of your footballing career. So we wish him all the best. It wasn't nice to see, but if the Liverpool department, they've got an unbelievable medical team. So fingers crossed for the boy. He can get over the mental grind and the hard work to get back to where he wants to be.
can we agree that it wasn't a red card, or is it just me?
I didn't think it was a red card. No,
I didn't think it was either.
No. And not enough replays to have a look at it, right? Because it wasn't really shown afterwards.
I had a look at it again this morning, and it looks absolutely nothing. Yeah, he comes from behind, like a yellow card max of if anything. Yeah. So it's more the injury that obviously makes it, you know.
Well, I think after he's seen the injury and he's seen the leg, he's going, "Oh, that's a red card. I'll have to change that." If you look at the challenge, Tommy, I totally agree with you that he had to go for that. He makes a challenge. He hasn't two-footed him to snap his ankle or anything like that. It's just the coming together that there's been and I really feel for him, because he's going to be hurting now even more, knowing the injury that he has put on that lad, Elliot, without thinking, you know, like, it's a red card as well, which makes you more guilty.
I also don't think it's helped by, you know, when Jurgen Klopp came out, I know he's emotional, he's very frustrated, he's obviously very, very disappointed, saddened for it, to say that, you know, don't care about the red cards, the sanctions, you know, he's back in 1 week or 2 weeks playing games, whereas this kid's out for 6 months. And I think that's really harsh, because I think it was completely an accident. There was no malice in it. It wasn't a bad challenge. I think it was about 5 or 10 minutes later, wasn't it, Fabinho did a very, very similar challenge on a Leeds United player. And nothing, obviously no injury came of it. So I think it's really, really, really harsh on him for a red card. And I think it's very unfair to point a finger at him, because there was no intention whatsoever.
No, I totally agree.
Well, Klopp's been on the warpath over a referee, the new interpretation where referees are letting a bit more go. I'm not saying this fell into that category, but it wouldn't shock to see this example come up if he keeps up that rhetoric over the coming weeks and months about... Yeah.
But it's not a bad challenge, you know. There's not even a reason to look at it and go, well, I'm letting it go. I think it's a foul. Well, it's a foul at best. Like Thomas was saying there, at best, a yellow card. It's not a red card. And I think he's sent off based on the actual injury. He's not sent off because of the challenge itself.
And I know the effect it can have on players, because I played with Ryan Shawcross at Stoke City, and he broke, I think it was Ramsey's leg, you know, and that was an accident as well. But, you know, Wenger came out, you know, and hammered him, and you know, he was really hurt, because obviously it nearly hurt, like ruined Ramsey's career, and you know, he got blamed for it by Arsenal fans, by the media. So it does have an effect. You have to be careful. You know, I know Klopp, you know, is emotional, like you said, but you have to be careful what you're saying until you've actually looked at the facts.
Yeah, and he was emotional. Hey, on a positive, Schwartzy, Mo Salah, well, you saw him at the start of his Premier League career, 100 goals later. A lot of people have asked, oh, did you think Salah would get to 100 goals? But I want to ask someone who was there at the start, did you think he would raise his heights, and what's he changed to get there? And what was he like at the start? Did you see, you know, there was something there?
21-year-old kid that looked like a rabbit, you know, a rabbit in the headlights, looked like he was in a different planet, let alone different country, and found the step up from Basel to Chelsea, I think, too great. And let's not forget as well, the pressure that Mo has had and has on his shoulders for Egypt. I mean, it's enormous, you know, Egyptian playing in the Premier League as well, at the level that he's playing at, the club that he was at Chelsea initially, then going to Italy, was enormous. I think leaving the Premier League, I think the limelight goes off him a little bit, and especially even also back home in Egypt. So he's able to regroup. He's obviously learnt from the experience at Chelsea. When he was at Chelsea, I thought he was very raw. He had an enormous amount of pace, but struggled finishing. He was a long way off the product that he is now, you know, the finisher that he is now. You know, but I think there's a lot of players you can look at throughout their career was exactly the same, where you started off very slow or you're nowhere near it, and you blossom at a certain stage of your career. And Mo certainly going to Italy, and I've heard many interviews with him, you know, afterwards talking about the fact that he was young, he was inexperienced, it was too early for him, and he struggled with it. Going to Italy was one of the best things he could have done, and he was able to regroup, to find his way, and to come back with a bang. And I also saw after the game, he said that he feels like he's not on 100 goals. It feels like he's on about 98, I think, because he doesn't really count the time at Chelsea. And I think that's also to do with the fact that he had such a bad experience, a tough experience. And I think he felt almost not embarrassed, but felt that he didn't give a true reflection of what he could have done as a player and how he could have been and how good he could have been. And obviously he's making up for it now.
When you're in a Mourinho dressing room and you see a young kid that's put in the corner or that's sort of being made to pay his dues, baptisms of fire, are there times you look around and go, oh, geez, he wasn't that bad. What's going on here? Or was it genuinely a case that he was not ready and he needed that experience to kick on the way he did?
You know what? I think he certainly wasn't ready. I think he struggled with the pressure. I mean, he played, I couldn't tell you exactly the top of the head, but I remember he played quite a number of games in a row. He came on quite a lot of times. And each time, in every game he played, he had a lot of chances. And he would miss one-on-ones. He would miss the goal. Goalkeeper would save it. And it just wouldn't fall for him. And the more that happened, the more he struggled with it and the more the weight on his shoulders grew. And I remember him, you know, coming in and getting taken off for one of the games at halftime. And he broke down because the pressure and the disappointment of it all was overwhelming for him. It was tough. And that environment is often the case, sink or swim.
Sporty, who was the number one goalkeeper at the time at Chelsea when you were there?
Petr Cech.
So you had Petr Cech and yourself as goalkeepers. You see, the difference between Mo Salah being at Liverpool, they've never had two quality goalkeepers like that. So when you're going up against your second choice in the shooting practices, he's up against Swarty. He's not going to score many. Swarty has damaged many a young kid's career by the amount of saves. Exactly.
Scotty Mack will vouch for that when he played.
Mo Salah's confidence went through the roof when he was going up against Mignolet. And who was the other guy? Kyrgios, absolute shambles. So that's the difference.
Yeah.
No.
Thanks, Bridge. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, sorry. Third choice.
Yeah, no, Cudicini wasn't there anymore. So there was Hilario was the third choice when I first signed. Then the second year, Hilario then went into coaching, and then there was me. I was number three. Courtois was one, and Pedro was number two.
There you go. I'm just giving you a compliment, the first compliment I've ever given you, Sporty, you see.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I'm blushing.
No, that's just your Spanish tan. Don't rub it in.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burnley did take a 1-0 lead on Tuesday morning through Ben Mee on a milestone occasion for him. But Everton, impressively, a six-minute blitz, three goals. They go up 3-1. They enter the top four, as you said, Bridgie, off the back of Keane, Townsend and Gray. And I just want to talk about this because we've spoken about big money. We've spoken about all these great players, all these great signings. We've spoken about Rafa Benitez a little bit in terms of Newcastle. Truth is, right now, it's the Townsend-Gray show. He's signed cheap with purpose. And so far, they're delivering.
Yeah, I think he's been absolutely magnificent. And I think what he's done, he's looked at that team and he's thought, you know, they've spent a lot of money over the seasons gone by. He's had a look at the quality that they've got. And Rafa's thought, I can get the best out of them by adding a little bit of pace and quality in the final third. And like you say, Townsend and the boy, Gray, has just been absolutely magnificent. He's having an impact in every game. He's been consistent. And it's, you know, defensively, I think they've been a lot more structured and organized. Coleman has had the license to join in. I think he's been an unbelievable leader as well this season. There's a couple of things he's had to diffuse. One of them was the penalty decision with Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin about who was going to take it. He handled that situation. And there was another one today when Rondon came on, who we all know as Rafa Benitez's son somehow, and Richarlison's number went up. He looked disgusted. And Coleman again was like, mate, do yourself a favour. Listen, just do it. So everything, the only negativity I can say about Everton at this moment in time is Richarlison and his attitude. He seems like more of an individual and a selfish player than he does for that team dynamics. But apart from that, you've just got to credit it because I think the balance with Decore and Allen in there, which we've seen on last season, they didn't have the balance. Rafa's given them something where he's given them a lot more organisation, a lot more understanding of what he wants. And it's allowed the front players like Gray and Townsend to get a little bit narrower. Where they can pick up the ball, like we saw from Townsend's goal today. Because if you've got Coleman on one side and Dina on the other side, who are making the overlaps out wide, Townsend can go and drift into more central areas, which is confusing for the back four because you're playing against five attacking players. And Townsend's goal, when he picked it up, absolutely special. Probably one of the, I would say, goal of the season.
Optusport app, if you're just listening, you didn't what think you're going to tune into Burnley Everton today.
Amazing.
Up to Sports Social, must watch.
And have a look at it, and have a look at his eyes on the goal. He's actually he's looking out to the left before he never really looks at the keeper. So there's a lot of technique in it.
Well, the big one I want to ask Swartzy is the main man that he picked up from the sign of the season was the Burnley signing, and it was Kone. So he was on the bench. He didn't want to come on at Goodison Park. What's going on with Burnley, Swartzy?
That's where Sean Dyche got it wrong. So he didn't bring him on. So that's the problem. Had he have brought him on, Burnley would have won the game. Cheeky bastard. Back to Everton.
That's coming back every week. We're going to talk about Burnley every week this season now.
Perfect man to bring into the club to work on a budget. Everton are gone. No way in the world are we spending any money this season because we can't afford to because they've spent so much money. Andros Townsend, I think I've always been a fan of him. I think he's a really good player, someone that probably didn't quite get to the level he possibly certainly showed in his earlier days. You thought he may really, really kick on here. But I think he's a really good signing for him. Demarai Gray, I was very uncertain about. I was with him at Leicester. A lot of talent. Found it difficult, I think, taking on information. I think it was something that he struggled with. Was pretty, I think, loose in his own style of play, wanted to do his own thing. And I think with Benitez, he's got a manager that just won't take any prisoners. And I think Demarai Gray is also a little bit older and he's probably realized that he certainly hasn't lived up to expectation and, you know, his opportunities may be running thin and he needs to start to take them and listen and take information on board. And certainly so far at his early stages at Everton, it's gone really, really well for him.
Now, we've gone in depth on some really interesting games so far. Lots of other stuff happening in the Premier League, Thomas. Crystal Palace, they knocked Tottenham off to start the weekend, 3-0 at home. Great win for Patrick Vieira. He was never going to let Crystal Palace lose to Tottenham, was he? Other notable results, Arsenal getting that win that we all said that it had to get against Norwich City. Mikel Arteta strangely called it the most satisfying week of his entire coaching career. Leicester City played well, but go down 1-0 to Manchester City, and Chelsea beating Aston Villa 3-0, the Romelu Lukaku show. But that was probably a game a little bit tighter than the scoreline suggests, but shows the quality that Romelu Lukaku and Chelsea have in those decisive moments. An appraisal from the three of you, starting with you, Thomas, on the other notable aspects of the weekend that we should be focusing on.
I think some of the important things, I think you've nailed. I think Tottenham, I think for me,
were a shambles.
They've had a great start, you know, with three obviously 1-0 wins. Not overly impressive.
Has it been a deceptive start, Thomas?
Yeah, I think so. And again, you know, I think the question marks have to be, you know, obviously Son, you know, how bad is his injury? Because there's sort of different things coming out that it could be a longer term. And you see the importance, especially in that transition. I think, Lucas Moura, you know, that there wasn't that connection between Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Lucas Moura. I think that was lacking. I think they were just, out-muscled. I think the effort from Crystal Palace was superb. I think Gallagher, I think, was unbelievable on the day. Coyote in midfield. You know, so, you know, I think there's worrying signs there that, yes, they are a good side, but if Son is out for a while, I can't see them staying in contact with that top four.
The difference is, I'm going to defend them to a degree. The difference this week, like you said, Son was out, Bergwijn was out, Sanchez was out at the back as well in the defence. Tanganga, who was the right back, had to come and play in the centre alongside Dyer. Dyer got injured early on in the game. He was taken off. So there was so many disruptions.
Red card then as well.
The red card, there was so many. But even before the red card, Dave, I've got to say Crystal Palace were dominant in this game, and they were absolutely making Tottenham look like they were a bottom half of the table team. But that comes from what the Palace were definitely up for it, but all the disruptions that came for Tottenham in that selection process, when you've had that dynamics of the team winning. When you take four players out of that starting lineup, it's going to affect any team when you're making that kind of changes and then losing another centre. And I really felt for the boy Emerson Royale and he's you know, the sign that right back coming up against Zaha, who I've just made him look an absolute fool. He didn't look like a Royale player. He looked like a pile of crap, to be fair. So there was a lot of things that I can defend Tottenham for, but when you look at the stats and you look at the performance, it was not acceptable.
And they have Chelsea at the weekend, then.
Yes.
Why are we even talking about Tottenham? Seriously, because I thought Palace were very, very good.
They were magnificent.
Yeah.
Let's forget about Tottenham, because Tottenham are going to be what Tottenham do, and they'll finish probably about sixth or seventh if they're lucky this season, right? Harry Kane obviously still not happy, and understandably that he didn't get his move. Dele Alli, the knives are out straight away. They won 3 out of 3. They lose one, and okay, they did get thumped. And they get beaten by Crystal Palace. All of a sudden, the fans are turning. Alli, Winks, Skip, they need to be bombed out of the team. They're not good enough. But you know, talking about early on in the season, Dele Alli was a revelation under Nuno Espirito Santo. So, listen, you look at Palace, Conor Gallagher, what a signing he's been so far.
Yes.
I think he's been very, very good for them. I think Vieira, I was very doubtful whether or not he'd be able to get the right mix with his Palace side so far. You know, that performance, obviously it's only one performance, but it's a great performance and it's one that hopefully will kickstart their season now.
Swartzy, I would say it's the best I've ever seen them in possession of a ball playing out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, and there you position. Go.
Not to pick up my countryman, but Anderson at the back, superb signing.
Do you think he's that good, Thomas?
Yes, I think he is. I saw Denmark's both games, you know, three games in the Euros now. And that he's playing now alongside Christensen and Kjær in a back three. If, you know, he surprised me, you know, and even with the ball, you know, I thought he hit some great diags at the weekend against Tottenham. He just looks confident and assertive, and he's physically strong. I rate him.
And the strikers' union just finish off this moment, because there was a striker came on in Edward, who coming from Celtic and just lost his main man. How he got his move after his miss in the derby for Celtic Rangers with his right foot when it came off his heel, I'll never know how he got the move, but it was all...
where his head was, don't we?
Oh, he had already gone. He'd already gone to Palace. But man, this guy came on and you could see Benteke walking off. He's going, all right, let's see what you've got, mate, because I can't seem to score anywhere. And 28 seconds later, he puts a touch and a shot he shouldn't have even got away. That's the quality of the man. It doesn't take him much. And he did it. And the confidence grew from that. And he got a second goal. And I thought it was fantastic. I did have a little chuckle because the camera panned around to the bench and you saw Vieira like absolutely delighted with his staff. We've got our man. And you could just see over the shoulders Benteke thinking, where is my career gone? Like, I'm done now. So it was a huge moment. And I'm looking forward to seeing this guy.
Yeah, but wait until he plays against some better opposition. Let's be honest.
Oh, wow. Here we go. Right, moving on.
Hey, I'm going to throw one more dagger in Bridgie, and it's a yes or no because we're running out of time, but I am fascinated by this. Is, even if Spurs get those players back, and they will, is Nuno's game plan their light this year?
Yes. No. I'm having him far better, and I like him. It's a better project for him than it was for Mourinho.
Okay, watch this space. Yeah. So we wrap up with the table, and this is how tight it is. Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, and Everton, all on 10 points, and the top three, all with a goal difference of 8. Manchester City hovering just outside, Brighton level with them, and Spurs with West Ham a point behind. Hey, Strikers Union, you mentioned it. Golden Boot race. There's some contenders this year. Have you been as excited by a cohort?
Can you do us a favor? I'm trying to understand what that word means because I've just Googled it.
What's that one?
What cohort?
Yeah, give us an idea.
Come on. No, it's
is it a new? Old... Is he a new player that signed for Burnley?
I think you'll find. Is it not an old military term of
today's lesson with Dave? We're gonna go. Okay, everyone. Cohort. Group, collection of people, collection of players. So the cohort of the strikers this year is Ronaldo, Lukaku, Salah, Kane, Vardy, and so on and so on and so on.
Thank you for clarifying that, Dave. I didn't want to use Google. I wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth. Thank you.
Hey, you know, it's just a bit of English lessons there as well.
Yeah, we're going to learn something. Never stand still.
The cohort of the Premier League strikers this season is absolutely mouthwatering. There you go.
anyone bold enough to make a call for who's going to be the golden boot?
Lukaku.
Yeah, Lukaku. Yeah,
we haven't even talked about
Ronaldo. Ronaldo, you know, he could creep up.
Considering how bad Chelsea were this weekend, we didn't talk about them, and they got the result. I thought it was probably the worst performance I've seen, and you got the result, and Lukaku made the goals and got himself to. Yeah. I cannot see him not being golden boot this season, and Chelsea not. But scoring, if you play,
scoring for the first time at Stamford Bridge as well, so you know, that was huge for him.
It was, wasn't it? You could tell how much it meant to him as well, Swartzy. Mm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, but I'll take it, Dave. I think the Premier League has always had good strikers. You know, I think it's a great bunch of there's a good mix of young and old, and I can't seem to not find a season where there hasn't been, you know, that great collection of the best strikers in the world. You know, you're looking outside the Premier League, maybe. All right, Swati, what you've got? But because
I'm just in shock that Bridgie didn't mention he's man crush. I just can't believe he didn't even mention him. Like he said straight away, Lukaku. How quickly one can just move on to the next one, huh?
Oh yeah, totally. It's like a girlfriend in the past, you know. Once it's done and dusted, it's over. So he's after he said he wanted to go to Man City, it's done, mate.
It's not really, is it?
Yeah, completely. I've taken his picture off the wall.
He'll score weekend, and Bridget will be drooling again.
Adam in my fantasy league team, he's let me down. He's not getting in next week. I'm going back with Lukaku.
8:17 a.m. the 14th of September. All right, Bridget's got that down. Written all good. Gents, a bit of a fun one to end off with. Trent Alexander-Arnold's celebration when Mo Salah opened his goal was just a subtle little cusp of the ear, finger in the ear, saying "I can hear you." When the crowd was just telling him beforehand, he was well, I won't use the word, but I'll replace it with a poor man's Kyle Walker. What was the most satisfying comeback you guys ever had when you might have been copying a bit of stick, whether it be from the crowd at the time, in the build-up, maybe from the media? Do you have a good yarn to end us off with this one? Because I thought, you know, what way to respond to a crowd than just teeing up Mo Salah like he did?
I'll give you a quick one for the lads. It was first game after I'd signed for Leeds United. It was Derby at home. I was absolutely horrendous. Probably had a one star out of 10. And you could hear the fans, you know, giving a stick like, Christ, £5 million. We've lost Hasselbank. You know, Tommy talked about multipliers earlier on. I was actually seen as a deductor when I signed for Leeds United when they lost Hasselbank. So I had to make a massive point to prove to the fans what you could do. And it wasn't actually the Leeds fans in the second game against Southampton. I'd scored two goals away from home. We were leading 2-1. Thankfully, the Leeds fans that had travelled had thought, oh, maybe we have got something here. And there was a Southampton fan right behind the goal, absolutely just hurling abuse at me. You freckly, skinny bastard, you're shit. It was just it was bleep, 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 bleep. And I looked at him and I caught eyes with him behind the goal. We had a corner kick. Ian Hart went out to take it. It would have been an outswinger from his left foot. And I remember catching eyes with a guy, and I just pointed at him and said, "This one's for you." And as I came, I just had a little glance and header and put it in the back of the net to get the hat trick. And the best part about it was you could see all the people that were around him turn to him and like, "Mate, you've just cost us that. That's because of you abusing him. He just scored a goal against us." And it was fantastic because you could see all the lads pile on top of me, and I'm just still trying to catch eye contact to give the guy. I didn't even need to give him the bird or give him abuse because all the Southampton fans turned on him in the stand, and that was the best way to repay them. It was very similar to Trent, the way he pointed at the fan and just give it to him. I thought it was fantastic.
Come on, the keepers. You must have had someone.
I had when I moved to Aston Villa and went back to St. James's Park, Bridges' old haunting ground, had a booing booing session for 90 minutes every time I touched the ball, and then managed to save a penalty and we won 2-1 probably 5 minutes from time.
Who took the penalty?
Oh, I think Alan Shearer.
Oh, there you go. I'll give you that one.
I definitely gloated about
it. And why were you getting abuse off the Newcastle fans when you returned from Aston Villa, Tommy? Because of?
Obviously, former Sunderland player.
Correct.
The hate there. So
memories go long.
Because you've got a couple of good results at St. James's Park for Sunderland. That's why they would have hated you.
Yeah, no, I think any Sunderland player. But yeah, there was a little bit of a history there with me and you know, Alan Shearer and some of the Derby games. So yeah, it was it's always nice when you come out on top of those little in-game in-game things. But you know, that's what makes football, though. We've all been there.
Yeah, I haven't got a real story other than the fact that when I signed for Fulham, went back to Middlesbrough the second time we played in that season. I mean, the first game we actually played at Craven Cottage, we beat them 3-0. I didn't celebrate any of the goals, just out of respect, right? So The ball went out at one stage for a goal kick. I ran over and it was in the section where the Middlesbrough fans were, and this guy picked the ball up from about 2 yards away and threw it at me, and it bounced off my chest and he got ejected from the stadium. Anyway, we won 3-0. The return, like the game, obviously later on in the season, we went back up to the Riverside, and every time my name got called out, even pre-match, I got booed. So I was at the club for 12 years, left, went to Fulham, got booed every time I touched the ball. And then... every time I touched the ball during the game, every time my name was mentioned, I got booed. And then we drew 0-0, played well. And after the game, the reporters are straight away saying, "So how do you feel just costing Middlesbrough relegation?" And I went, "Hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's got nothing to do with me."
Brilliant.
Yeah, so it's just they didn't have to say anything or do anything. It's just, you know, you play well and the rest does its bit.
Dave, I'll give you a good sledge I got from a linesman once at Stoke's ground.
A linesman.
It was a Tuesday night down at Stoke, or Wednesday night. I can't remember. It was bloody freezing, as always. And I'd had my second spell at Sunderland return. So it was a championship game. And I'd gone to warm up down the sideline with the two other players. And we're behind the linesman as the ball was played through to Marcus Stewart. And he was caught offside by the linesman. He's put his flag up, and I've gone, "Are you kidding? That was never offside. That's a shambles. That's a joke." And the linesman's like, "Well, at least I got to grace this pitch. I'm not on the bench like you again." And he just ran off up the side. Well, I thought he ran off as, and I couldn't get anything else to say. Well, my two colleagues were absolutely cracking up on the sideline, and I got absolutely burned from the linesman. Yeah, so there you go.
I think I've said it before anyway. I had won the World Cup 2006 when I got dropped for the game against Croatia. Graham Pohl was warming up, and you know, the English referees and linesmen, so they were warming up, running around the outside of the pitch. And I was doing a bit of a warm up with Ante Kovac, and I went, "Hi Graham, hi guys," and Graham went, "Oh, been dropped, have we?" I love it. Right? It's like I was devastated being dropped, right? And then he's like,
"Just had a fuel the fire."
Oh my god! I would have loved to have seen the smoke come out of your ears.
Oh man, I was fuming.
It'd be burning.
And the thing was, that was the game where he showed. I think Simic. Yeah. Simic, is that right?
Joseph Simic, yeah.
Yeah, Simic, two yellow cards, or three yellow cards.
Three yellow cards.
Showed him. Yeah. And I felt like afterwards, I really was tempted after the game to go up to him and say to him, "Listen, I've got no doubt next game we'll be back on the pitch, but you will certainly be on the next plane after that performance." I didn't do it, though. I didn't have it in me. I should have.
But you regret now.
I regret. And to be fair, I also played in his last ever Premier League game, and I felt like saying something to him then, but I actually ended in the end. I just blanked him. He said hello to me, I blanked him.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
But you got one?
Good story. What was that, Bridget?
Yeah.
I've said any of the Newcastle fans have any chance for you? Like, can you remember what they were?
For me?
Yeah, any of yous have?
I actually, all right. The one other thing that happened to me was I played Sunderland. I don't know if it was you were playing from at the time, Thomas. I don't remember. Remember we played him at, we were playing at Stadium of Light. And there's a kid behind the goal, Sunderland fan, yelling out, "Hey, Schwarzer, can I have your top? And I was like ignoring him. And I thought, he kept going on. He was about 12 years old. I thought, all right, I'll give him my top, my warm-up top. So I give him my warm-up top, take it over to the, you know, you take it over to the stand, give it to him. And I turn around and start running away. And this top comes flying past me and just missed my head. And I turn around, the kid's pissed himself laughing, and everyone's behind the goal just laughing and going, "Way." She just
threw it back at you.
He threw it back at me. He did me a kipper.
Oh, you gotta love it.
How good's that?
I thought I was being nice, you know. I thought, you know why, he's a Sunderland fan. I don't care. Like, I never I like the rivalry, right? And I wanted to win, of course, but it wasn't like I didn't hate Sunderland. I didn't hate Newcastle. I just, you know, I wanted Swartz, to win, of course.
That's very reminiscent of this shirt behind me, this AC Milan shirt. That's actually Costa Curtis against when we beat Milan at Elland Road. And I swapped shirts with him. And he did the same thing. He walked around Elland Road and I witnessed him just throw my shirt into the fans. Oh, no. I was gutted, man. I gutted.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, dear.
He obviously looked at the number and the name. He thought, who the hell is this? I'm not having that one on my wall, but
I've got quite a few of those shirts of players that, you know, like you would never even know who the players were from teams that you played against. And I remember them coming over and asking for my shirt. And I would go, well, I always found it really bad if it happened to me that you offered a shirt or you asked for a shirt. And they didn't want it all. They didn't even. Well, I would always say, "Can I have yours?"
I think Ronaldo had to give 11 away at the weekend because every Newcastle player went up to and asked him for his shirt. It was quite embarrassing. He was like, "I've already given it to Lascelles."
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's a story. Is the jersey collection? That's one we definitely have. Maybe we'll save that for the next podcast as well. That was a good laugh, as promised. One to end off, which I do want to touch on before we finish off, and it's one we don't talk about the J League particularly much on the Gang and Pop, but I want to ask you, Schwartzy, because this weekend we have Nagoya Grampus up against Yokohama F Marinos, and that is of course Mitch Langerak against Kevin Muscat, and Muscat's gone there, manager of the month in his first. You know, first few weeks of replacing Ange Postecoglou in Japan. But Mitch Langerak, he's retired from the Socceroos, obviously for family reasons, but 18 clean sheets this season in 28 games.
Broke his own record.
Yeah. So he was always a super talented keeper, but he's gone to Japan, had regular minutes, and I believe lived up to the promise that he's always shown. Can you tell us a little bit about your view of Mitch and attribute to this phenomenal achievement?
Why is he retired from international football as well? That's what I want to know.
I think he's obviously got a young family. And I think also, COVID certainly would probably have an influence on it. Young family being away from home, difficult for family to come and travel back and forth, being apart. Totally understand it. I get it. It must have been an incredibly difficult decision for him to make. But I also understand why he's made it. It's a real shame. I mean, I think, the thing about Australia is, and we've had it for a long, long time, we've had an abundance of top quality goalkeepers. So there's always been this conveyor belt, or certainly has been for a number of years now. So obviously if Mitch is not available anymore, you've still got Matty Ryan, Danny Vukovic, just to name a couple. So there is an abundance of goalkeepers there and are playing at good level to play. So probably for Mitch, he probably felt, the sacrifice of going away, being away from my family without necessarily playing, was too great to spending time and being with my family. Like I said, I totally understand it. And it does give him an opportunity to concentrate and play, as best he possibly can for his club side. I personally believe it was too early, too soon. But I'm sure he would have had enough conversations with Graham Arnold. And I think as a player, and you guys will probably vouch for it, whenever you speak to a manager and you're talking about leaving, you're talking about maybe retiring of national teams, whatever it is, depending on the response you get from them will also dictate on how you carry on a decision, I had it with the national team, right? So when I retired from the national team, there was no response from Ange whatsoever. So like other than actually I didn't hear from him for about 3 months. So even though it wouldn't have changed my mind, it was just confirmation that it was the right time. And I think for Mitch, I'm sure he would have had those conversations with Arnie. And that may have also been a factor as to maybe confirmation that it was the right decision for him to make for him personally. But it is a great shame. So back to the overall question, why is it? How is it? He's found his place. He's found his league. He's played. He's found a club that believe in him, a manager that believes in him. He feels obviously very much at home and he's able to produce his best football. We all know when you are happy, when you find a manager that backs you, 100% supports you, and teammates have faith in you, it kind of the rest kind of falls in line, it certainly makes it a lot easier to go out there and perform, and Mitch has certainly got that.
Well, Nagoya Grampus, they're in the top four. They're not necessarily in the title race. Yokohama Marinos certainly are. They're a point off Kawasaki. They've played a game more, but it's going to be a thrilling race to the finish. And you could have Kevin Muscat replicating Ange Postecoglou's achievement coming in, you know, three quarters through the season. That'd be
He should cut the trophy up and send three quarters it over to Ange at Celtic and say thank you very much. But still some achievement to keep that momentum going.
I'm not sure, Bridgie, because obviously Ange's second season wasn't you know, didn't win the title.
It's tongue in cheek. I was just being a bit.
Yeah. I think yes, absolutely. And Muskie's been very, very forward in saying that Ange has brought in his philosophy, the players bought into it, and he's carried it on. So I give Muskie a lot of credit for it, because how often do you see a manager come in and go, right, I need to change so many things because I don't want to people to associate that team with the previous manager.
He's embraced it. He's seen the winning formula. He's embraced it, and he's added his own little spice to it, but he hasn't. Yeah,
absolutely. So for me, that in itself deserves an enormous amount of credit. And if the manager's not good enough and the players don't buy into it, they wouldn't be where they are and they wouldn't have the results that they're having. Forget about the previous manager. For all that fantastic work that Ange did, Muskie's now taking it forward and he's taking it on to another direction. Whether it's another level or not, I don't know. But certainly the players are bought into it and they are performing incredibly well, and he's done a tremendous job so far.
Well, certainly there's some press out of Japan that was quoted on the Opensport app, an article we had a couple of weeks ago that said they're playing arguably as aggressive or even more attacking football than they did under Postecoglou. And you can also read from quotes from Kevin Muscat right now on the Opensport app about how he says you can't avoid the presence and the philosophy that Postecoglou left behind. You walk into Yokohama F. Marinos and you can feel it and you can breathe it and it's there. So that has them right in the title race. And just the last thing on Langrack, you know, I'm really pleased. You know, he's one of my favorite Socceroos to interview. A great talker, a really, really good talker and personality. And it's good to see him get this run on the board, because perhaps that time he spent in the Bundesliga is one of the more understated stints abroad in the last 10 years, Schwartzy, because, you know, he was involved in that Dortmund team right when they were right up top of the league. And now, you know, reaping the benefits of that experience.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly great groundings, great foundations for his career. The only question, I suppose, is post the Dortmund time that he didn't really establish himself in Germany. He did well with VfB Stuttgart when in the second Bundesliga. Then they got promoted, and then all of a sudden they brought in another goalkeeper. Mm. So that's that whole thing about finding a club manager that believe in you 100%, that you're the right person for that job at that particular time. And that was, for me, the exact same thing. When I left Germany, I was in Germany where things weren't going well. I didn't have a manager that believed me, so I had to leave. I went to England and I found a manager, I found a club that did. And that gave me a foundation, an opportunity to go out there and perform at the best possible level that I felt that I could. And your self-belief grows enormously. And you guys will probably, will also confirm the same. You know, when you have that support and that belief, you can then go on and play at your best. And that certainly happened with me, and it certainly is happening now with Mitch.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff, gents. You know what? I stopped looking at the clock. I'm enjoying talking to you guys too much. And the beauty is we have a lot for our loyal listeners to listen to and enjoy and read about and watch on the Opensport platforms and your podcast platforms over the next week. That's all we got time for. I'm going to end off with one word from all of you. The Champions League winner this season. We've got to get this down on the record.
Don't do it in one word. You know that. I cannot give you one word answer.
Why? Is that because it's Manchester City?
No.
Tottenham, and Tottenham is not in it, is it?
No.
Come on. Here we go. I'll go from my screen goes Thomas, Bridgie, Schwartzy. So, Thomas, you'll go. We'll go to you first.
Let's get PSG to the top. You know, that'll be fantastic to see those three lift the trophy. So, PSG.
That's not one word. It's three letters.
Control yourself, Mr. Wiener here. Control yourself. Sit down. Chelsea yet again, and I'm going to say Chelsea can do the treble or the quadruple this season. This the squad depth that they have, the quality they have, and the manager. I've got them going for everything, mate. There you go.
How good is the Gagnepod? Seriously, it's just gone to another level this year. Unbelievable predictions, Bridgie.
And that's from a so-called Tottenham fan as well, isn't it?
I admire what Tuchel has done, and I just think Chelsea, I really love what they've done. And getting Lukaku in, that brilliant.
I said at the beginning of the season, I fancy Chelsea to win the league if they get Lukaku. Obviously, they've got him, and he's already producing. I don't see that changing. I think I said it before as well, is that Tuchel's biggest challenge is managing that squad of players. He did it at PSG, and he did it last season at Chelsea. There's no reason why he can't do it now. So, yeah, if I'm gonna say someone right now, and I have to say someone, I'm also gonna say Chelsea.
Wow, there you go.
Right. And I'm just gonna
let's get a PSG Chelsea final. Let's go.
And yourself, Dave.
Who am I to go against two? Seriously, I've been building to this for the last 3 years. Here we go. We've got all the
brilliant.
But you know, that's why I can't say Chelsea. That's why. Yeah, I can't
if there's
say
any
Chelsea.
One of probably six teams, certainly at this moment in time, you have a valid argument to say I'm going to win the Champions
League. All day long.
Totally.
Yeah, so it's that close. You know,
I mean, you've just got to look at Barcelona's front three. I mean, they're not there anymore.
I said six because they're like in the top eight, I think.
Braithwaite's injured now, by the way.
Betting.
Actually, if you want to read a good piece, there is a piece on the Optusport app that talks about Newcastle and Middlesbrough fans looking at Barcelona and going, is your strike force Braithwaite and De Jong? It's a brilliant.
You know, Braithwaite's out now, isn't he? Yeah. He's out for a couple of months, I reckon. So.
Yeah. Oh, I better get the boots back on. I'll tell you what, I'll get that. Where's the jersey? There it is. There, right?
They're not that desperate, mate.
Window's gone.
Boys, we might wrap it up there. I don't know if the podcast can hold a show this long, but who cares? It's been about a great time, and there's a lot of football to enjoy over the next week, and we'll be back to do it all again next week. Thomas, Bridgie, Schwartzy, thanks for your time. Stay safe, stay well, and to everyone out there, thanks for your company as ever, and until the next episode of the Ganger Pod, make sure you enjoy your football.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.